Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Lara.
Morena.
How are you?
Yeah, here we are. Look, I don't have much to say about how I am. I think whatever, I don't know.
Like, no comment.
Christmas is on the horizon. I'll put the tree up for the kids soon. It'll be a good time. That's all, really.
Got to finish
some writing deadlines before the end of the year. Owe some people some words. But, you know, there's still a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You got this.
It's definitely feeling like crunch time, but we're going to get there in the end.
We get something after it, don't we, after this crunch time. So at least there's that, yeah.
Yes. There's a few things happening in the world of politics at the moment, one of them being Scrutiny Week, which I must say I wasn't super familiar with until this year, and it feels like the Greens are really having a field day.
Yes, yeah, so it's only really been in place the last couple of years due to some changes to the standing orders. So the standing orders are pretty much like just the rules of Parliament. And they're kind of decided by a committee and the Speaker's office. So, yeah, they made that change a couple of years back. So now we have this condensed scrutiny weeks, one around right after the budget in June. The budget's normally in May, and then there's a scrutiny week for the budget. And that's mainly focused on ministers. And then we've got this one, which has been last week, which is mainly focused on ministers again, but also some of your senior chief executives. So, you know, someone is in charge of any given government department, and so they kind of made their way through the 40-odd government departments who reported to the more relevant select committee and answered or did not answer a bunch of questions about how they're doing.
It seems like a relatively good initiative to sort of uphold democracy, even if it is a bit sort of intense of a week.
Yeah, I mean, overall it's important. One of the things within democracy there's a few kind of important things within democracy, and scrutiny is kind of broadly a nice word to summarise them, because we want to have bits and pieces like the media and other people that can kind of look at Parliament and kind of criticise or scrutinise it. We want to have the voters, the citizens, being able to scrutinise Parliament and see that, you know, go online, find documents and be able to see where there's a loophole, an issue or whatever there is. Things like the Official Information Act are meant to help the public do that. And then we want there to be scrutiny on the executive, so on Cabinet, the 20 or so ministers that are in Cabinet, and the government itself. And that's what Parliament does, or technically does in Scrutiny Week, is the members of Parliament, the MPs, who are in select committees. So select committees, you can't be in Cabinet and be in a select committee. So select committees can then scrutinise the executive, scrutinise the government, and how they're doing, and hopefully, you know, find some places where they can improve, because it's the same thing with lawmaking, as the idea is that we all might disagree on something and we might be critical, we might find a problem, but we're trying to work together to find the issues and make the best laws and best kind of government departments and policy processes possible. So that's the idea behind all of it. A bit romanticised, a bit textbook, but that's how it's meant to happen.
Interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what can actually come out of this week, whether there's sort of action that can be put into place for holes that are found.
Yeah, so what we've seen is you know, the odd little headline or odd little bit and piece there, here and there. The main one that's kind of piqued my interest is Sir Geoffrey Palmer. So for those who don't know, Sir Geoffrey Palmer was a Labor Party Prime Minister for, it was less than a year, in the late 1980s, early 1990s period, when they were quite turbulent after Longy had left. And so he's just kind of, because he was a law professor before he became an academic, and then law professor before he became a politician, an academic, and then he went back to kind of being an academic and law professor, and he's now, I think he's sort of mid-late 80s, and he's just kind of been around writing lots of books on the Constitution and all of those bits and pieces over the years. And so he's generally thought of as someone more Labour-leaning. I mean, obviously, if he's been the Labour Party Prime Minister, of course. And so he's come out and said that there's just too many laws passing without proper scrutiny, and talked to the select committee about that, and the fact that the government keeps using this thing called urgency, which means that the laws don't go back to public submissions, they don't go through all the step-by-step process, they don't have proper research, proper investment, proper time invested into making them good laws. And so this has been a trend over many years. This isn't just a national government issue. This happened under Labor as well. So he's kind of saying, well, urgency should only really be used when there is an actual emergency. So when there is something like COVID, or there is something like the Christchurch terrorist attack or something similar to that, rather that any other law should be taken through the whole process. So that's been the main take-home for me, is that, like, you know, we've been seeing a lot of people really concerned about our democracy, and yeah, Sir Geoffrey Palmer is very resolute on it, and quite convincing, actually, because he has the data, he has the numbers, he is a professor. That's what we do. So that's been one kind of highlight for me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the consequences of the week unfold. In other news, the sort of mixed skimming scandals saga continues, and there seems to be a little bit of a sort of hot potato game of blame and liability sort of happening here, with the police commissioner claiming that Minister Mark Mitchell knew about mixed skimming before they did anything. Where are we at with this?
Yeah, so this has been a, you know, kind of sad continued story where, again, it's like scrutiny is the name of the game. And for the citizens to be able to, like, I don't know, look to the police to know that the police aren't doing corruption or bad things and are following all their processes. I mean, it's one of the fundamental parts of society that we hope the government agencies, including the police, are doing what they're meant to, and there's not any kind of issues there. We had this kind of interesting situation where Q&A, so if you're a politics nerd, Q&A is one of the go-to shows you watch every week, you know, Sunday morning, I always watch it, so such a thing for me. And so Q&A, interestingly, this week was just an interview with Andrew Costa, the former police commissioner, who was recently the chief executive of the Social Investment Agency, but he has chosen to resign from that role because he sees himself as responsible for the mixed skimming issue. He had that issue raised with him, that mixed skimming had this woman in this relationship, but mixed skimming had not said that woman was being employed by the police. And then later, Costa found out that the woman was a police employee, and realistically, you know, like, Jack Kane kind of challenged it quite a bit, Costa quite a bit, is that it should have been a red flag and there should have been a lot more investigations. And it seems like some kind of junior people in the police did try but couldn't kind of get through or get the cut through. And so it then becomes who's responsible, because, you know, there's this kind of principle in terms of governance, management, the board or whoever it is, the high-up people are responsible for the culture in the organisation. And so that's where Cost has gone, okay, I'm stepping away from the Social Investment Agency as well because I need to take responsibility. In terms of government and cabinet, so you can think of, like, government or cabinet as kind of like our board, our country board in a way. And so there, normally what happens if you're the minister, and you're the minister in charge of an area, you are what we call like vicarious responsibility. So you are responsible for what happens in your agency, even if you weren't involved in that day-to-day management. And so we've seen the media kind of challenge Hipkins this week because Costa said that Hipkins knew, and that you know, the current Labor Prime Minister, Labor Party leader, former police minister, and also Mark Mitchell, who's the current police minister. So there's allegations that they both knew. They're saying, no, we did not know. And so then it becomes a case of, what do you do with all of this? Because they're denying it, saying they didn't know anything. And then now it's like, okay, there's a clear issue with the police. What happens? And we've seen a lot of people call for another independent investigation, perhaps with different terms of reference to the Independent Police Conduct Authority investigation. And I've seen this morning that Luxon yesterday was talking more about there being some kind of other independent insight, watchdog, something or other within the police, and Hipkins kind of agreeing with that. So that's rather than doing something like a Royal Commission or some other kind of investigation. So it's kind of where we've landed, and I think people can kind of consider whether, you know, another layer of watchdog on the police or oversight of the police is what is needed here, or whether it's a culture shift, or whether it's some other reporting process, or what it is. But it seems like there's not really a solution here, hasn't really been found.
Yeah, it's really disturbing to think that this sort of cover-up, or people knowing about this, could have gone so deep and crossed party lines so much that it really feels as though it's exposing a fundamental issue with the police rather than just one instance of sort of bad management.
Definitely, and that's such a concern, I think, for all New Zealanders, right? I mean, we know that some communities have long, critiqued the police, right?
Yeah.
So Māori communities, specific communities, when we look at things like the Dawn Raids, LGBT communities, if we look at, the horrendous things that happened to specifically, transgender sex workers in the 80s and 90s, the police clearly targeted them. All of those communities have had not good relations with the police, rightly so, but I think on the average kind of Pākehā New Zealander, and looking at the police now, this is quite concerning, and that's often who we turn the spotlight on as a society, right? But a lot of these issues have been showing up, and you would not think that this would be something that would be happening in 2025, when there was about 20 years back, the issues with Louise Nichols and her sexual assault and the police covering that up and bits and pieces there. And I saw a commentator say that, the wording of that report and those investigations were almost exactly the same to the wording of the mixed skimming investigation. So that's a really sorry state to be in, ultimately.
Just quickly before we let you go, I want to touch on the updates with Te Pāti Māoru, because there's been a bit happening, and we know that Mariana Mano Kapakingi has been reinstated, but Takata Ferris is still sort of taking shots at John Tamahere. So I'm curious as to your thoughts as where things are sitting.
Yeah, so this is, I think, the most spectacular blow-up I've seen. So, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the early 2000s with Alliance. I think that this now beats that. Just the reinstatement of Kapakingi into the party by the court, and then there's a final hearing on that in February. And now this whole thing about who does she sit with? Does she go to the caucus meeting? She is now a Te Pāti Māori member of parliament again. So it's very awkward, confusing, setting new precedents for behaviour and ways things go. And now Ferris, I'm not sure quite what happens with him, because, is he going to do a court challenge? Probably not. But then if the party has followed the same process for him as they did Kapakingi, which it seems like they did, then I think legally they probably got to reinstate him too. And I think for Ferris and Kapakingi, it's quite clear that at this stage, they want to change the party from the inside. They don't want to form their own party. Mm. They believe in Te Pāti Māori and the kaupapa and some of the people involved, and they want it to change. But then again, on the other hand, they're going to have to, if the leadership changes, they have to change the leadership. So it's like, how do you then push out a president who said that he's not going? And then do they want to change the party leaders, the Rāwhiti Waititi and Debbie Ngāre Wapaka? Is that what they're trying to change? So it's a big, long-running saga. I mean, the moment you get constitutions, courts, rules and bits and pieces in play, then it's a matter of ruling all of those and going through boring processes and making sure there's enough time and all of that sort of thing. And I can see that this will roll on and on and on and on. And ultimately, 2026 is the election. So we'll kind of see what happens there. I've kind of given up on trying to predict what Māori seat voters do, even though, I'm technically an expert in it. I'm like, nah, this is not. Honestly, Māori voters, they do what they do. History doesn't predict what we do. Data doesn't predict what we do. We do what we do. So that's going to be an exciting feature of the election, although, I feel for people in it at the moment and Te Pāti Māori at the moment, because that must be, emotionally hard to deal with.
Yeah, it seems like it's near impossible to, like you say, change Te Pāti Māori from the inside if you've got John Tamahere pretty staunch in his position. It feels as though it's going to cause a lot of tension heading into the election, and it's potentially going to cost them a bit.
Yeah, totally. And this is the thing, is we don't quite yet know. I mean, it might be that people turn their votes to Labour, and that Labour wins back some of those seats. But then, on the other hand, can you see Hanna Dafiti Mikey Clark losing that seat? Probably not.
Mm.
It's probably not going to be a thing that their voters look at the party and say, oh, well, that party's a mess, I'm not going to vote for Hanna Dafiti, when they see themselves in her and they think she's been doing, it seems like they think she's been doing a great job. Always hard to know with an electorate. So it's, and for Maria Meno Kapakingi, you can see where the voters might give her the boot. But then again, the North, I'm just not, Ngāpuhi Whakataba, the North is a mysterious beast.
Mm.
And you don't know. On the other hand, it might be a case that Kapakingi, people go, oh, well, she stood up for her principles, she stood up for the North, and vote for her. So we just don't know what's going to happen there. We do know that I think that they've been through their candidate selection, so those are in place. So it may be that Kapakini ends up in Parliament again after the election and Ferris again after the election because their voters return them because they thought they were doing well. It's just so hard to predict. It's just anyone who says they can predict it, no, you can't.
Ah, well, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep, exciting.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Lara. You have an awesome rest of your week and we'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.